Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. The number of people using bicycles to get around the city and beyond is on the rise. But in the last 5 years, more than a dozen people were killed also biking in Boston proper. Most recently, it was 38-year-old Anita Kerman who died in an accident with a truck turning onto Beacon Street in Boston's Back Bay, and the investigation to her death is ongoing. The bigger picture, there's a new report from the Centers for Disease Control, and it finds that nationwide, the number of cyclist deaths involving a vehicle have decreased overall. And that's one takeaway, but because it's not entirely rosy. The takeaway is not satisfying for anyone. Bikers, their families, drivers, their families, politicians, and transportation planners. So the question is, how can the roads become safer for everyone? And can both driver and cyclist take more initiative and responsibility than they already might take? Joining us in the studio is Peter Firth. He is a professor of civil engineering at Northeastern University, and he specializes in transportation and infrastructure. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Welcome back, I should say. I believe you've been here before. Also with us is Jackie Douglas, Executive Director of the Livable Streets Alliance. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Listeners, we do want to hear from you right now. If you have a bike, if you have a car, if you bike, how do you make yourself most aware of the traffic around you? Drivers, same question. How are you aware, given that there's so much going on the roads and in your car? One other question, are city planners doing as much as they can as possible for people to ditch their cars to get to biking? Because that could affect a whole lot of this environment that we live in. Should cyclists and drivers both be more educated? And how can we just overall lower the number of biking fatalities? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Find us on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Radio Boston. Jackie, I want to start with you, if I can, with that intersection, Beacon Street, where 38-year-old Anita Kerman died recently. There were 14 accidents in that very same spot or similar spot over a few-year period, just a few years ago. So what so far can we say about this area and what the city has been doing or paying attention to this particular intersection? And if you can describe it, too.
Great question. So there's been too many crashes and collisions. This is the one we, you know, heard a lot about recently because it unfortunately resulted in a death, but there are many more that might go unreported or other near incidences. We do know that this is a problem spot, and the city recently committed to making our streets safer by committing to Vision Zero to try to get to zero deaths and collisions on our streets. But the jury's still out on kind of specific action steps that will come out of this. And so what we hope for is that we can quickly move to making this intersection safer because we know there's a problem.
It's a grid, though. I mean, it's really one of the gridded areas of the city. Yeah. Can you describe what it looks like and why it's problematic?
You know, it's an interesting hotspot because it's right. You're coming off of the Mass Ave Bridge where there is a bike lane, and then it kind of drops you into this intersection. The pavement changes. It becomes rough and bumpy. You have a big, wide open intersection. It's a little bit of a free-for-all in terms of, you know, as someone who's biking, kind of where should I be to get through the intersection to either make a right or go straight and before another bike lane kind of picks up. So the idea is that we could actually create better infrastructure, separated bike lanes, or also known as cycle tracks, in that area to provide a more safe and comfortable space.
Okay, and in a few minutes, I'd love to get more specific about the engineering of these bike potential bike pathways and how bikes can be on the road in a safer way. Are there other areas, and Peter, please jump in on this if you'd like to, in the city that you can highlight as needing immediate attention, other intersections?
So many.
There are hundreds.
There are hundreds. I mean, you can
name two.
I mean, I would say all of the Mass Ave corridor is identified as one of the biggest hot spots in terms of where there's the most currently reported crashes and collisions. And the second would be, you know, Commonwealth Avenue through Boston as well.
I'll give you a third. The Huntington Avenue corridor. Five cyclist deaths since 2000.
All right. Longer term, you've got a city. You know, this is one of many cities. You've got roads, drivers, bikers, pedestrians. You have texting, you have cell phones, you have radios and traffic and construction. How does one develop a solution to safer roads? I mean, that's a tall order I just listed. So please, let's break it down categorically. I mean, trucks, the physics alone, the truck wins always. Describe what exists now as safeguards.
The main answer to that question is separation. It's such a simple idea. We understand it perfectly for pedestrians. We don't expect them to walk in the street with cars and trucks. We provide them separate sidewalks. The same thing with bicyclists. Bicyclists are just as vulnerable. And in places that have been successful at getting mainstream population to ride bikes, places like Holland, places like Denmark, it's simply been accepted for decades.
Separation. In a sense, Peter, did we put the cart before the horse, if I could put it that way? You've just come back from the Netherlands, I understand.
Yeah.
A place where biking is quite prevalent in this, I mean, I'm thinking Amsterdam in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, you know, the culture that we've lived in is a car culture. We're very different than Europe in many ways, in the city and elsewhere. So how do we now revert some of this, if that's what you're suggesting, is make it more bike-friendly?
Well, there is a question you could say, do we even want to promote bicycling at all? But that question is not out there anymore. It's been answered. The city has a transportation plan. They understand bicycling is important for public health, for transportation, for livability, for making the city competitive compared to other cities. And so we have a plan to increase bicycling to 10% of all trips. So we want to increase bicycling. And if we're going to have safe bicycling, we need separation.
And the city does have a plan. I just want to point out, and we could talk more about this as well. There is the 2013 Cyclist Safety Report. There are plans targeting both climate change and bicycling and health. I mean, there's a lot going on in a network. There's this interactive map that we found this afternoon looking about what the city hopes to do with the types of pathways, safeguards, separated, as you said, Peter, for separated places like sidewalks for pedestrians, roadways uniquely for cyclists. Let's hear from some of them, some of those cyclists and drivers. Jackie, you want to say something first before
I just want to say we have, you know, we've set ourselves up for success over the last couple of years. The city has made strides when they launched the Boston Bikes program, and working on complete streets and thinking about different guidelines and policies. Huge strides this past year around the Commonwealth Avenue design through the Boston University campus that now has been declared kind of a model street. And now the biggest question is, what is our pace of change? And so it's no longer a question of, like, what are the technical or, you know, details? It's now a question of how do we quickly implement across the city?
All right. We are talking with Peter Firth and with Jackie Douglas about biking in Boston, about road safety, especially about infrastructure and the responsibility of drivers and cyclists who are on the roads, not only in Boston, but in greater Boston. And because there is the need to think about how close the Brookline, Boston, Cambridge lines are, and beyond that. We've got some bike trails, which is great, the rail, you know, the rail to trails, trails to rails. But we know that there's a large number of bikers, more and more, who are on the roads. Peter Firth, I want to ask you about driver and biker education, cyclist education and driver education. And Jackie, please weigh in on this. There is a need for everyone to be aware. Is there an onus on one or the other more so?
Of course, both need to be aware, but there's a huge difference in the motivation. Bicyclists are incredibly motivated to be aware because it's their lives that are at stake. When it comes to truck drivers especially, that's the you mentioned that there have been 12 bicyclist deaths. 8 of them were involving trucks or buses. And that's a special problem that needs addressing.
What does the lesson sound like or look like for a truck driver? And I'm sure that there is quite a bit of awareness going on for many drivers. But what do you think could – I'm not asking you to speculate what could have happened to Anita Kerman, but this driver was making a right-hand turn from a left-hand lane, as trucks sometimes have to do in narrow areas.
Yeah.
What did they need to do in addition to putting on a signal?
Right now, we have a choice of either no penalty, just, oh, isn't it too bad, or – a criminal penalty that we're loath to implement, and that it's very hard to prove criminal negligence. What we need is something in between, something that protects vulnerable users, that says if you're driving a truck in a city and you injure or kill a pedestrian or a bicyclist, you're going to lose your driver's license for a reasonable amount of time, proportional to, and that will motivate truck drivers. They'll figure out this kind of mirror works, that kind of system works. They will be more motivated if they know their job is at stake.
Like a public health initiative, like the seatbelt, for instance, and the advance of the seatbelt. But Peter and Jackie, what about What about the biker and licensing for cyclists and losing licenses if you run red lights?
Yeah, I do want to highlight something around trucks that's of note is that the Volpe U.S. Transportation Center that's actually based here in Kendall has been taking the lead in providing mandatory side guards. And an interesting study...
Can you describe what they look like?
So side guard, nearly half of people who are struck by a truck, the impact starts from the side. And so a side guard is between the two wheels on the side of a truck on the base to help protect not
does
going
it push,
underneath.
Does it push a cyclist off, basically?
Yeah. Okay. It creates a, rather than underneath. And a study showed that in UK, 60% drop in bicyclist-truck collision fatalities resulting from these mandatory side guards. And even though people say, oh, we're different than Europe, the reality is Europe made these choices to implement these policies. They, too, were very car-centric at times. And since the 1980s, the European Union, as well as Japan, have required the standard. So that is something that, thankfully, Boston and Cambridge and New York City have, you know, jumped on that bandwagon, but we need to see more
of
that.
In these places, right. Jackie Douglas, Peter Furst, stand by for a minute. The question I raised about whether cyclists should also have licenses may be answered by Peter, who's calling in from Wayland. Peter, thanks for calling Radio Boston. We want to hear, I know you're a, I believe you're a cyclist, is that correct?
A long-time bicycling activist, yes.
Okay, so what's your take here?
Well, first I want to tell any cyclist who rides on the street should read Effective Cycling by John Forrester. There are techniques in terms of how to focus your attention and how to maneuver that can save your life. The second aspect is very simple. You should absolutely look at bike paths as a possibility, but it's not necessarily the best thing. The roads were established for cyclists before there were cars. Cyclists have a right to drive. They need to maintain their bikes as if their life depended on it. And again, if they need to take up a whole lane, they should, but they should also know that they can't block traffic.
Peter, stand by for a second. Jackie Douglas is shaking her head.
Yeah, I respectively just want to kind of flip that, you know, argument on its head, and we have to ask ourselves what is going to make streets more comfortable for people of all ages. And the reality is that, you know, we don't see success until we can see people, you know, comfortable, you know, biking with their children, you know, to school and around every day, and asking people to kind of jump into a lane of traffic where cars are allowed to go, you know, 30 miles per hour is tough.
And Peter, are you yourself actively doing what you espouse there? Peter and Wayland? Do we still have Peter?
John Forrester's Effective Cycling Techniques work. I've been a messenger in Boston. You'll find few cyclists with as many miles under their seat as have gone under mine.
All right. Thank you for calling in. Peter Firth, who is in the studio with us, an engineer also specializing in transportation and infrastructure. Any way you want to weigh in on how Peter and Wayland envisions what a cyclist's life could be like in this city?
Yeah, you know, Peter's the utopia he describes is one in which bicyclists are equal participants in traffic with cars. They have a right to the road just like cars. We've tried that. We tried that for 40 years. And hardly anybody will ride a bike under those conditions. And claiming that it's safe is just flies in the face of everything we know about the incredible the fatality rate in the United States for bicycling is 8 times greater than it is in the Netherlands, where they separate bikes from traffic. So I think it's pretty clear separation is more important.
We're talking right now about bike safety, about drivers' responsibilities and cyclist responsibilities with Jackie Douglas from Livable Streets Alliance and with Peter Firth, who is an engineer and who specializes in thinking about how roads could be built better. Let's go to David calling in from Dorchester. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. What's your comment?
First of all, I'm going to just say I think it's really great that people are biking more. But something I see every single day, and I drive through the city for work, is bicyclists not following the rules and flying down on sidewalks when it's actually illegal to ride a bike on a sidewalk. So I see this, and it drives me crazy, because then if somebody gets hurt or the person hits a car, then people automatically say, well, it's the car driver's fault. But, you know, and they'll be walking down Mass Ave on the bridge, and there's a clear bike lane on the road, because the cyclist is flying down the sidewalk, dodging pedestrians, and if you're a pedestrian, you turn around for a second, and there's a bike flying by next to you, which scares the hell out of you.
Okay, so everybody's breaking the rules, right? We've got the bikers breaking the rules, we've got drivers breaking the rules, pedestrians jaywalking breaking the rules. Who's going to take responsibility here?
One thing we should be clear about, it is not illegal to ride a bicycle on a sidewalk. State law says that it is illegal to ride a bicycle on a sidewalk in a business district. The Mass Ave Bridge is not a business district. The sidewalks on the Mass Ave Bridge, those are shared use paths that bicycles are allowed to ride on. Now, if we have an epidemic of bicyclists killing pedestrians, that's something we should address. But we don't.
Do we have any data on that?
That's the whole point. No, it hardly happens. We have lots of data of pedestrians and bicyclists being killed by motor vehicles. That's where the attention belongs, because that's what's hurting people.
I think what's also really important in this discussion is it's not just about cyclists. I mean, we're talking about people here, people who are trying to get to work, trying to get to school, trying to get to the grocery store, friend's house, etc. And it's not just about cyclists. It's thinking about sometimes those people are choosing to bike, they're walking, sometimes they're driving themselves, and not kind of pitting anyone against each other. And in that case, people choose to get on the sidewalk because there isn't a safer space for them to ride, but they're just trying to get, you know, somewhere where they need to go. That's not to say that people aren't breaking the rules or, you know, misbehaving. But that's why we need to take and work with the city on kind of a holistic approach to how we can, you know, make the infrastructure better. And, you know, you kind of, it's this give respect, get respect, right? I mean, you put out a right, safe crosswalk, right. You're telling, it's providing a space for people to like walk across the street, and you're putting up a signal timer or something. And we should be thinking the same. Bike signals, separated bike lanes, creating a network of low stress streets, often on street paths. And we don't have that today. Mm-hmm. We have a very disconnected network that doesn't make sense.
Jackie, take it a step higher. We're talking about an infrastructure of people trying to get places, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So we're talking about campaigns, and we're talking about better ways of moving people with less emissions, you know, into the atmosphere, right? And that's where the biking comes in. And Peter Firth, as an engineer, I mean, you have to look, I imagine, at the whole city to make possible what you'd like to see possible. Let's forget for a moment about the myriad projects that are ongoing right now, all the things that are developing in the city of Boston and around Boston. What about that whole big picture of change in a city that's always moving forward? How do you create what you envision? Not utopian, but realistic.
We have a public transportation system, a very good one with some rapid transit lines and so on, the same way we need a bicycling network. You know, it was only 6 or 7 years ago that Mayor Menino said, the car is no longer king in Boston, which means that until 7 years ago, the car was king. There was no concept of all of creating a bicycling network. And that's what we need to work toward. Until bicyclists have safe places that they can ride from where they're living to where they're going, we're always going to have problems with safety.
All right, Peter Firth, thank you for joining us today. We're talking about transportation, biking, infrastructure. Jackie Douglas is also here. Both of them concerned about how the city of Boston and the cities around Boston move forward with bikers, pedestrians, and drivers in the mix. We're going to Benjamin next, calling in from Natick. Benjamin?
Hi.
Are you in a car?
I am in a car.
Just asking. Okay.
Irony in the fact that I called you while at a stop sign.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, I am both a avid cyclist as well as somebody who commutes most of the time in a car. So I find myself often on both sides of this problem. And I've found actually, you know, most of my cycling nowadays is more for fitness than for commuting, but I've found that I want to do it less and less because of how many distractions I know there are for the driver. You know, and I just see that as a problem, and I'm sort of looking for safer options to get my fitness than through sharing the roads with drivers.
So you're our everyman, Benjamin, you know, the guy who has to get someplace and the guy who has modal options, you know, to get there. There is a lot going on in the world every day when you're interacting with a wheel or your bicycle handles. How do you address that, Peter Firth, when you think about the engineering and that might be a fix, but what else?
Well, as I said before, the number one thing is separation. That's why we advocate for cycle tracks or separated bike lanes, so that where the bicyclist is physically protected, separated from the traffic. Places where bicycles and cars mix should be where cars are going at low speed, where it's low volume. One way the city could make a lot of difference with that is to allow more two-way for bikes on one-way streets. Brookline has done that, making some very safe bike routes through Brookline by allowing bikes to go two-way on quiet one-way streets. And Boston has one street so far that they've allowed that. There are hundreds that are waiting so that bikes could have an official safe ride on a quiet street like Minot Street, Medfield Street, lots mm-hmm. of streets like that.
I just remember hearing about a road out in Western Mass where I hail from mm-hmm. that is a state road that's less used now. Maybe it's in Connecticut even. It's Connecticut. And because it's a lesser used state road because of the highway, they're widening the bike path. They're widening the yeah. shoulder for both pedestrian and bike path. So maybe an awareness also of the use of roads. When the city or the state is surveying what roads are used for, that must factor in, Jackie, to how you think about what you're doing as an educator in many ways.
Yeah, it's an important question. It's not necessarily looking at, like, okay, how many people ride or walk on the street currently? It's how many people do we want to be, having riding and walking? And I'm sorry to hear about Benjamin not riding as much as he would like to anymore, because that's a loss. That's a loss for everyone, that we have less people who are choosing to be active, be outside, and choosing to actually get on their bike for exercise or to commute. So we need to be thinking hard about how to flip that around. And there's a lot of things we can do quickly. And I would just again mention that, when the city redesigned Commonwealth Avenue, it was a great example. And what happened after that was that dozens and dozens of people contacted Livable Streets and said, oh, how do I get this in my neighborhood? Right. And so we have to make sure that the city now is, actively redesigning other intersections.
Jackie Douglas and Peter Firth, we will look to the future with you in the future again, talking about biking and cars here in this city. Peter Firth is a professor of civil engineering at Northeastern. Jackie Douglas, thank you, from Livable Street Alliance. Thank you both.
Thank you.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. We'll be right back.